Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
Yes, I'm so thankful Chad gave us his time today. So sort of jumping on what he was just talking about there, I would give you this observation. I have found that there are basically two kinds of people in the world. There are those who feel like they are failing at parenting, and then there are those who aren't parents. And can I get an amen from any other parents in the room today? Because, I mean, it's so funny. Yeah. And an applause. Awesome. I was just having lunch with Chad like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we were talking through this, and it's funny. I feel like he and his wife, Melissa, they're just like forces of nature when it comes to this. They're so invested in their kids, so invested in their work, so invested in their community. They're just so invested. But he looked at me, and he's like, why are you giving me the mic on this weekend? Like, and I'm like, I don't know why they give me the mic on any weekend, but like neither one of us felt like capable or qualified to even begin to talk about this. Because if you're asking me, there's just always this lingering sense of guilt, I guess, guilt, about how I'm not investing enough in my most important relationships, especially with my kids, especially with my wife, especially with my closest friends. Maybe I could say it to you like this. No matter how much I give of my time, I always feel someone deserves more time. Because you see, investing in one place means neglecting another place. And usually for me, I am far more bothered about where I'm neglecting rather than proud of where I'm investing. So for example, in those seasons of my life where I'm really investing in work, I'm talking like 75, 80, 85% of my time and energy is invested in work. I'll be honest with you. Things are good at work because I'm focused, extra poured in, extra invested. We're getting the to-do lists done. We're leading well, casting vision, checking off the boxes, solving problems. The sermons are better. You know, I'm better researched. I'm writing stuff like we're loving the villain, raising the funds, and, you know, mobilizing volunteers and pastoring to people. Things are good at work. And I like it. I enjoy it for a season. But I can't enjoy it long because while I'm invested here, I can't help but notice that I'm neglecting my family over here. Because an investment in one place is neglect somewhere else. So for example, this week, I feel like I knocked it out of the park at work. I got a lot done. Just going to be honest with you. Right, on Monday and Tuesday, we had our Love the Ville conference here at church. 10 churches from all across the country, some as far as California, 40 church leaders converged on our campus in order to hear the story of how one church caught the attention of one of America's largest cities through the servanthood and generosity of Jesus. It was an amazing 24 hours with these churches. We got to love on them. We got to like fire hydrant, yes, that's a verb, fire hydrant them with as much information about your story as we possibly could, and then we sent them out. Over 100 people showed up to pray for them this past Tuesday afternoon. It was so cool. But then when I walked into the office on Wednesday after that, one, I was tired, and two, I already felt like I was 2 days behind. So I had to go hard and fast all day on Wednesday and on Thursday. Then on Wednesday night, we had small group. Thursday night, Lindsay had Bible study. And then on Friday, I got in the office at like 6 a.m. and I was like, oh yeah, I've got a sermon to write. So I started working on my sermon at 12 o'clock on Friday. I then jumped in the car, drove to Cincinnati because I sit on the board at a school that trains up ministers in Cincinnati. They got like 180, 190 ministers in some of their programs right now. Then I jumped back in the car, drove to downtown Louisville to go to one of our global outreach partners fundraising events downtown, the Jasper House in Haiti. Okay, then yesterday, I woke up, came in, started working on my sermon, preached our sermon for the first time at 5 o'clock last night, and then I came here this morning, and I got to spend all morning with you. And that's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. I got to tell you, when I take a deep breath and I say amen at the end of this sermon, I want to feel like I accomplished something this past week. Well, okay, thank you. I appreciate that. But I also can't help but think about the fact that I haven't held my daughter in 2 days either. And isn't that the tension? Man, we've been so productive the last 3 days at work, and man, I haven't had a real conversation with my wife the last 3 days because of work. Man, we're churning it out and grinding it out over here on the job, and man, all my responsibilities at home are falling into the cracks. You want to know one of my warning signs at home that I know that I'm probably getting a little too invested at work? One of my warning signs is that the dishes don't get done. Because that's one of my roles. Like at the house, I do the dishes. And when I'm a little too busy at work, the dishes just start stacking up in the sink and then stacking up on the counter and then stacking up on the table. And it's like, there's no dishes clean. What are we going to do? You know, like seriously. Oh, you want to know how I really know that I'm too busy? When the dishes stack up and the coffee doesn't get made. Because me and Lindsay love coffee. One of our favorite things in the morning is to hit the button and then pour the coffee. Oh, it's so good, right? And yet sometimes at the end of the day, I'll just be so tired that I don't get the coffee made. Now, we laugh and we smile because those are seemingly small and insignificant things. But they're small warning signs of a larger problem. What are your warning signs? But you have some. Honey, the laundry will get done eventually. It'll get fixed eventually. The lawn will get mowed eventually. The bills will get paid eventually. Sweetie, just go ahead and feed the kids dinner. It's going to be another long one at work. Honey, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to miss the first half again, but I'll be there for the second. Or how about this one? One of my favorites. It's just a season. I promise you, it's just a season, and we'll get through this season. Now, if I'm being honest with you, far more often I'm too invested in work and not invested enough at home. But there are seasons where I do swing the pendulum in the other direction, and I'm invested over here. I'm talking about 75, 85, you know, 90% invested. When I invest that way, because my focus and my energy is here, things go better at home. The dishes get done. The coffee gets made. I spend quality time with my kids. Lindsay and I connect, and we fall deeper in love with each other. And yet, while I'm experiencing this relational progress at home, I can't help but think about how I'm neglecting work. It's like I feel this constant temptation to step out the room and check an email or send a text or make sure the church isn't falling apart without Tyler. You think God can build his church without Tyler? Nope, better send an email, right? Or how about this one? You know what will get me sometimes? I'll be invested here at home and not quite as invested in work, and so all of a sudden I'll start feeling guilty that I'm not giving my best at work. Those are things that come to my mind, you know? Well, I'm settling. I'm settling for, that'll do. I'm settling for, well, that's just going to have to be good enough. And I don't like to operate like that. I don't want good enough. I want great, right? I want to constantly raise the bar of excellence in my life. And so, okay, maybe I could say it to you like this. Here's the tension I live in. When I'm at work, I wonder if I should be at home. And when I'm at home, I wonder if I should be at work. And can I get a frustrated amen from anyone else? Amen. Hey. Now, here's what I do. When I find myself in the midst of this tension, I usually make an even bigger mistake. And I do this like every month. You think I would learn by now, but I haven't. What I end up doing is I just get fed up with it. I say, you know what? My family doesn't deserve 50% of me. They deserve 100% of me. And you know what? My work doesn't deserve 50% of me. They deserve 100% of me as well. So you know what? I'm going to give 100% of family, and I'm going to give 100% at work. I'm going to give 200%. I'm going to be Mr. 200%, Mr. Superhuman, Mr. Double Human. And that's what I do, right? I go full force, full investment in both, right? I pack my schedule full of work stuff, and I pack my schedule through all the family, friend, relationship stuff, and I push myself all the way to my limits, right? I have no margin. I have no margin for the unplanned. I have no margin for the unexpected, no margin at all. I am living at the limit. And then life happens, and the unexpected and the unplanned gets thrown into my schedule. But instead of dropping some stuff on, I add it on, and I push myself past my limits, and I just go full throttle. I'm talking about pedal to the floor. I'm talking about needle in the red, day after day, week after week, month after month. And then I'm surprised when the engine blows up. I'm surprised when I run out of gas a little earlier than I expected. I'm surprised when I lose control of the vehicle around a sharp turn. But why am I surprised? Why are you surprised? You and I both know our lives are not meant to be driven that hard. And yet we do. Okay, so here's what happens to me. Two things happen to me when I live life in super busy mode for too long. One, I get stressed. And two, no one actually wants to be around me because I get stressed. You know busy makes you stressed, right? Because you have 1,000 things to do and no time to do it. There's no time for breakfast. There's no time for chit-chat. There's no time for lunch. And there's definitely no time for traffic. Get out of my lane. There's the slow lane and then there's my lane. Turn signal, idiot, right? Like, that's how it is. There's no time. And you know what? When you live life in no time zone, right, then you're no fun. And you don't have any fun. Think about it. Some of you are living life like driving 80 miles per hour while eating breakfast, while answering emails with your kids in the back because I'm going to be the ones to take them to school. I promised I'll be the ones to take them to school and get out of my lane. Who gave you a license, you idiot? Right? This is the elevated levels of stress that we live with. And no wonder nobody wants to be around you. You know what's so ironic? What's so ironic is that the reason why you packed your schedule so full with work stuff and family stuff is because you want to be around. But nobody wants you around because you're so stressed. The stressed version of you is a snippy version of you. The stressed version of you is a short-fused version of you. The stressed version of you is a fatigued or exhausted version of you. Or even worse, the stressed version of you is an unpresent version of you. You can't even be present in the room and in the moment because all you can think about is what's next on the schedule. This is where I live too often. And I bet this is where a lot of you live too. So let me ask you an important question. And this question's hit me like a ton of bricks over the last few years. And it's caused me to rethink a lot. Hope it does the same for you. Let me ask you. What do you think? Did God give us life to be endured or enjoyed? This is a picture of me and my wife, Lindsay, that she snapped through on social media from this Friday night, one of the few moments we really got to spend together this week. And I tell you what, if you know my wife, you know that I have such an amazing life partner. She loves God. She's a tremendous mother. She's great at her job. She has far more emotional intelligence than me, so she keeps me pointed in the right direction. I'm so thankful that God gave me her, and I'm so thankful God gave me the gift of marriage. And you tell me, what do you think? Did God give you marriage and your spouse, to be endured or enjoyed? This is a picture of my oldest, Palmer. Took his picture this summer at a family wedding. And he's 3.5 right now. And he's at this stage in his life where all he wants to do is spend time with his dad. That's all he wants to do. And yet, what an opportunity I have to impact this little human life at an impressionable time for years after year after year. You tell me. Did God give me Palmer, my son, and this amazing father-son connection, father-son relationship, to be endured or enjoyed? This is a picture of my youngest, Larkin. My little baby shark. It's us on Halloween this year. She's 10 months old now. Turn a year in January. I'll go ahead and tell you, babies don't keep, do they? They just boop, 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 and then they ain't a baby anymore. I gotta ask, did God give us this second child, this precious baby, and this unique season in life to be endured or enjoyed? You know, when you put it like that, the answer is so simple, right? Kind of obvious, if you will. But even for those of you who aren't religious, let me ask it to you like this. How do you want to live your life? Do you want to live your life in such a way that you endure it or that you enjoy it? The answer is so simple. But if we are going to enjoy our lives, then we have to make balance a priority. You know, my life has gotten increasingly complex over the last 3 years. I got this job leading the church. We've had two kids, and just adding three things like that in one life, you know, over 3 years, it's just, it makes things a whirlwind, right? I'm thankful for it, but it's just made things increasingly complex. So I've had to take a deep breath and just reevaluate things and start being very intentional about how I strike balance. And on my better days, not on my normal days, but on my better days, I've begun to implement a few practices that I've found have been really helpful for me. I want to give you four of them. And my prayer is that they'll be helpful for you. And you might begin enjoying the blessed life God's given you. Here's the first one. And this is less of a practice and more of an understanding. But I want to encourage you. You got to understand, you need to do it all, but you can't do it all the time. You need to do it all, but you can't do it all the time. What do I mean by that? Well, you need to do it all. Family and work, you need both. I believe that both family and work are important God-ordained responsibilities and God-ordained desires that are inside of our hearts. Every single one of us have this hardwired desire inside of us for family relationships. Even if your family's not that good to you, right? You have this desire for intimacy with people, like father, mother figures in your life, brothers and sisters who will love you and who you can love in return, right? And in the same way, we also have this desire hardwired inside of us to work, to exercise our gifts, to exercise our blessings in order to help others, in order to impact the world, in order to change lives. It's inside of you. It's inside of me. And that's not by accident. I believe God put it there on purpose. You're created for family and work. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, the creation story of humankind, it says that God blessed humankind, and he said this, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth. Or in other words, create family, create community. But it doesn't stop there. He says, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, and govern it, lead it, steward it well. Now, what's God doing here? What's he saying? Well, I believe he's giving us family and work from the beginning, community and work. And I'm going to tell you, if community is going to work, then we have to work for one another. We have to work together. The healthiest communities are where everyone steps up and plays their important role, even if it's a bigger role, even if it's a smaller role. Small example, just think about how many hands, how many people are involved in the process of getting food from farm to grocery store to table? We need each other, right? So what's my point with all this? So this is my point. Okay, you need to do it all, family and work. And if you're one of those people in this room who actually likes your work, who enjoys doing what you do, who has an exhilaration to leave home in the morning and go and use your gifts to impact others, to impact your community, to impact your employees, to impact the world. I want to encourage you, that's not a bad thing, that's a good thing, that's a God thing inside of you. And I would encourage you to continue to work hard and work well. You need family, you also need work, you need to do it all. But, you can't do it all the time. Which brings me to point number two. Second, we have to constantly challenge our unrealistic expectations. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, okay, for those of you who are mathematically challenged, let me put it like this, okay? You can't give 100% to family and 100% to work because 100% plus 100% is 200%. And you don't have 200%. Despite what your middle school football coach said when he said, go give 110%, you don't even have 110%. All you have is 100%. This is where balance comes into the equation. You know what I believe balance is? Balance is allocating your time and energy in a way that is fair, wise, and loving. It's that simple. It's allocating your time and energy in a way that is fair, that is wise, and that's loving. So here's how I think about it personally. 3 years ago, in my first sermon as the lead pastor here, I made 7 promises to our congregation about what kind of a leader and what kind of man I wanted to be. And one of those promises is this. Some of you will remember it because you were here. I said, I promise to prioritize all 3 of my ministries. A ministry of husband, my ministry as a father, and my ministry as the lead pastor. All 3. And that's what I see those 3 roles as. They're all ministries. And you have ministries too. Now you do know, ministry is not necessarily a religious word. Ministry actually just means something like an act or a vocation of service to someone or something. And that's what I see these roles as. When I said I do to my wife, Lindsay, I was committing to the ministry of marriage, to serve her until death do us part in such a way that I helped her become the person God created her to be. When Lindsay and I decided to have kids, we committed ourselves to the ministry of parenthood, to serve Palmer and to serve Larkin in such a way that we helped them become the people God created them to be. And when I accepted the role as lead pastor here, I committed to the ministry of this community to help our church become a movement of people that shines the light of Jesus into our community. And all of them are important, vitally important. However, I can't do all of them all the time. So that means sometimes I'm gonna have to walk away from my wife and kids in order to serve you. And that means other times I'm gonna have to walk away from you. I'm gonna have to say no to you. I'm gonna have to manage expectations and not show up at every event and not be on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week so I can serve them, because all my ministries are important. Okay, so let me make this really, really practical for some of you in the room. I'm gonna talk to 2 groups here. First, for those of you in this room who are workaholics, who idolize work, as somebody who has the tendency to lean that direction, and as your pastor, I just want you to hear me say, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it to sacrifice your wife, your husband, your son, your daughter, your friends. It's not worth it to sacrifice them on the altar of work. As I've moved slowly from busy towards balance, you know what I've had to get comfortable with? I've had to get comfortable with a lot of people who live crazy busy in our crazy busy society looking at me and saying, well, you know what? Tyler just doesn't work that hard. And that's been hard for me, okay, because I got an ego issue when it comes to my work ethic. I wear my work ethic like a badge of honor. I'm a hard worker. I'll outwork you if I have to, right? But if I'm going to move from busy to balance, I just got to get comfortable with the vast majority of people who are way too crazy busy looking at the pace of my life and saying, he's just not that busy. He just doesn't work that hard. Now, you see, what they mean when they say that isn't actually he doesn't work that hard, because I do work hard. What they actually mean when they say that is that he doesn't work as hard as me. And thank God for that. I hope that's true for many years down the road, because I want to have a relationship with my wife and a relationship with my kids 10, 20, 30 years down the road. So can I just say, it's not worth it. Workaholics, it's not worth it. Could you just get to a place where, I don't know, you were okay with 50, 60-hour weeks? Could you just get to a place where you are okay every once in a while being passed by for the promotion or not being the number one earner in your division? Could you get okay with saying no sometimes at work so you could say yes sometimes at home? Could you get okay with experiencing some personal sacrifice for relational progress? Could you get to a place where you just have something left when you get home at the end of the day? Maybe that's a good place to start. Where you just have something. Okay, again, for those of you who are mathematically challenged here, Let me ask you. If you give 100% at work, how much do you have left at the end of the day? 10%, because 110%. Not 10%. 0%, because all you got is 100%. Right? And that's how some of you are. You show up at the end of the day, and you got nothing left for your family. You zombie out on the couch, turn on Netflix, eat junk food, and you're no fun to be around. It's not worth it. Okay, other group in this room. Let me get really practical. For those in the room who are parents and idolize their kids, I want to talk to you for a second. You're like, parents idolize their kids? Oh, more than you'd think. Those of you in here who are parents and idolize your kids, let me tell you this. If you want balance in your life and your kids' lives, your kids need to regularly hear you say three things. One, they need to hear you say, you are a priority. You are a priority to me. I'm going to put the phone down. I'm going to put work down. And I'm going to spend time with you because I love you. You're a priority. They also need to hear you say, your mom or your dad is a priority to me. I want Palmer to regularly hear me say, buddy, your mom and I are going on a date and you're not coming with us. You're staying here. The babysitter's coming. Turn on a movie. I don't care. Eat junk food. Whatever. Just be happy for a few hours because me and mom are going to go spend time together. Because if this relationship is healthy, trust me, buddy, it'll be healthier for you down the road too. Parents, one of the best things you could do for your kids is invest in your marriage. Here's the third thing I want them to hear me say. Buddy, my work is a priority. It is. My work is a priority. I want Palmer to regularly see me leave the house and know the reason why I'm leaving is because I've been gifted by God in certain ways to serve him and to impact our community. Buddy, I'm leaving the house to go serve Jesus in the ways that he has gifted me. This is the way I love my neighbor, buddy. Now, for some of you in this room, it's not as easy for you to connect your job to service as it is for me because I work in a church, right? But I guarantee you, for most of us, our jobs in here are connected to service. And that's the connection you should make in the minds of your kids. For some of you, you're like, I don't know if I can connect my job to service. In fact, it's not a benefit to humanity. It's a detriment to humanity. You need to get a new job, all right? But for the rest of us, you need to make that connection in your mind. This is how I love my neighbor. This is how I serve my community. This is how I make a better national community. This is how I make a better global community for those around us. Now, here's what I don't want Palmer to ever hear me say. I never want Palmer to hear me say, buddy, I gotta go to work because I gotta make some money. Buddy, I gotta go to work because somebody's gotta pay the bills. Now, that's true. I do gotta make money. We gotta pay the bills. Gotta provide for my family. However, I never want Palmer to see money as an end. Because see, in my family, money's never an end. It's a means, but it's not the end. Servanthood is the end. So you are a priority. Your mom is a priority. My work is a priority. Make sure your kid hears that regularly, and I'm telling you, you'll find balance. And so will they. Third piece of advice. This is the one that's been most impactful for me this year. Focus on small, simple daily wins. Small, simple daily wins. I'll give you a list of some of the goals I set for myself this year, 2018. In the mornings, on as many mornings as I possibly can, I want to make breakfast for the family, and I want to transport the kids to where they need to go. Now, this is not every morning. You know, probably on the average week, it's a few mornings a week. But as many mornings as I possibly can, I want to make that a priority. In the evenings, I want to make sure the dishes are done, coffee's made, Palmer's in bed, and I want to straighten up the living room. And some of you are like, straighten up the living room? That's kind of silly, right? You know, it takes about 5 minutes. Yes, it only takes 5 minutes, exactly, all right? And putting the pillows on the couch, folding up the blankets and getting the toys in the toy box takes my wife's stress level down at least 2 notches. It's probably one of the sexiest things I do all day, just to be honest. Ask her. If your wife is clapping right now next to you, take a picture of the screen. I'm just saying. I wanted to take Lindsay on 24 dates, at least 24 dates this year, twice a month. That's not too much to ask. I wanted to take 150 phone Sabbaths with my son, Palmer. What's a phone Sabbath? It's me taking my phone, putting it on the other side of the room, or taking my phone and putting it in another room, and then walking over here and being present with him. Sometimes it's 15 minutes, sometimes it's an entire afternoon. But I'm addicted to my screen. I bet you might be too. 3 times a week, I try to have intentional phone Sabbath time. I want to go on a family vacation. Some of you are like, you have to put your family vacation on your schedule. Yes, I do. And so do some of you in this room, because you know you'll put it on the schedule at the beginning of the year, and then all of a sudden this will get added, and this will get added, and this will shorten it, and that will shorten it, and all of a sudden, boop, 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 and before you know it, it's almost gone. Okay. And then lastly, if you have young kids like me, then you know that a family vacation is no vacation at all. So I wanted to make sure that we went on a couple of no kids vacations. With our friends, or with just me and Lindsay. Now, most of these on the board right there are pretty simple. You're talking about 5, 10, 15 minute things. Seemingly insignificant at first glance. But I tell you what, they add up when you do it day after day, week after week, month after month. You know what I believe? I believe that in any arena of your life, but especially in the arena of relationships, I believe that greatness is not doing something great. Greatness, rather, is the sum of countless small wins. In Christianese, we call it daily faithfulness. Daily faithfulness. Just every single day showing up and doing the right thing and taking the small step and taking the small step and taking the small step. Now, here's what I don't want you to do. I want you to confuse greatness with the rewards of greatness. Those are two different things. Greatness is not the promotion. It's not the raise. It's not the award. It's not the acknowledgement or recognition. That's not greatness. That's a reward of living great. I'll put this in context for the parents in the room. Parents. Greatness is not when your kid gets baptized. Greatness is not when your kid graduates high school or gets through college without a criminal record. You know, greatness is not when your kid gets their first paycheck or moves out or gets married. No, those are all rewards of greatness, mileposts along the way where you get an opportunity to celebrate. But greatness, true greatness as a parent, was when you decided on a regular basis in simple, small, seemingly insignificant ways that you were just going to show up day after day. One of my friends named Scott recently had his first kid, and in preparation for it, he wrote down some of the daily wins that he wanted to accomplish, and he sent them to me, and I thought it was so practical that I just wanted to share his letter with you. Maybe it'll help you out. This is what he said. He said, Ezra's due date's about 50 days away, and Sarah and I are so excited and thankful to God for this blessing. I've been working on some parenting resolutions, though, and what I love about these is that they're mostly free things that anyone could do, but that I intend to use as points of accountability for my relationship with my son. Now, here's his list. He said, one, I want to pray for, with, and over him daily. Two, when speaking, I always want to look him in the eye, never be condescending. Three, I want to love his mom in such a way that if he grows to treat his wife the same, I'd be proud. Four, I want to speak value, strength, and courage into him each day, by affirming something I see in him or proclaiming over him something I believe to be possible. Fifth, I want to have breakfast with him weekly, man night monthly, and a father-son retreat annually, for as long as he lives under my roof and as long after that as I can. Sixth, I want to always keep my word. Seventh, I want to be present, especially for meals, bedtimes, and important events. Eighth, when I mess up, pretty simple, I just want to say I'm sorry. Ninth, at least once a day, I want to tell him I love you, give him a hug, and make him laugh. Tenth, I want to identify and develop shared interests. 11th, I want to give him a handwritten letter each year on his birthday that casts vision for his future. And 12th, last, I want to talk regularly with him about Jesus and my faith. Now, in my opinion, that's what greatness looks like right there. And it's nothing too extravagant or complicated. It's actually pretty simple. It's showing up over and over and over and over in simple, small, seemingly insignificant ways, but that add up over time. And that brings me to my last point. This is where I want to conclude today. My last piece of advice to you, no matter where you find yourself in leadership today, no matter what kind of priorities are spinning around and pulling you in this direction or that, I want to challenge you to remember your most important priority, and that's Jesus. I remember on that first weekend where I preached my first sermon as a leader, and I gave my 7 promises. The very last promise I made to this church that day was that I would always prioritize my relationship with Jesus first. Then after I made that promise, that week at work, my first week at work, I did this interesting thing to sort of not just talk the talk, but walk the walk. I wrote my resignation letter as the pastor here. Made 5 copies of it. Gave 1 to my bosses, 1 to a coworker. Gave 1 to my parents, 1 to my wife, kept 1 for myself. And I told him that if this letter was ever true, to give it to me and I would turn it in. This is what the letter says, dated April 17th, 2016, to the elders of Northeast Christian Church. If you are receiving this letter, my job at the church has become a serious obstacle in my relationship with Jesus. So I quit. With sincere love for God and his church, Tyler McKenzie. And I hope they take me up on that challenge, because I do believe Jesus is the most important priority. In fact, I believe that if I get my relationship with Jesus right, then nothing else matters at the end of the day. And if I get my relationship with Jesus wrong, then nothing else matters at the end of the day. And I actually believe that if I keep Jesus as the center, as the priority, I'll be a better worker, I'll be a better parent, I'll be a better husband. Look, if I keep Jesus as a priority at work, you know what will happen to me? I'll walk into work every single day with a servant mindedness, a servant heart. I'll hold character and integrity as supreme values. I'll approach work with excellence because I know God's gifted me with my gifts, and I want to use them for God in a way that brings him glory and makes him proud. But at the same time, I won't have to find my identity in work because my identity is in Jesus. Check this out. For so many of us, it's so common for us to compartmentalize our faith from our work, but that was never meant to be that way. Your work and faith aren't supposed to be separate. No, work is supposed to be an extension of your faith. So keep Jesus as a priority. You'll be better, I promise. I actually believe that Jesus is what's best for my marriage. Because you know what the Apostle Paul wrote? He said, husbands, here's the secret recipe for a great marriage. Love your wife as Jesus loved the church. He laid his life down for her. I'll tell you what, if I stay focused on him, then I'll be able to stay focused on her. I also believe that Jesus is the best thing I could do for my kids. Not making them a great soccer player, not making sure they're an A-plus student, not helping them get a scholarship, not even helping them be a contributing citizen to the United States of America. Those are all important. I hope those things form, but that's not the most important priority. The most important priority is pointing them to Jesus by modeling Jesus for them. Because at the end of the day, 2 billion years from now, what's going to matter to me when it comes to them? So perhaps I could say it to you like this. 3,000 years ago, there was a song written. And it was simple, but so profound that the people of God decided to put this song in their scriptures. It's the 128th Psalm. In this psalm, this man tells us what he believes the good life looks like. He says, here's what a good life looks like. You'll enjoy the fruit of your labor, how joyful and prosperous you will be. Or in other words, work will be healthy. Then he says, your wife will be like a fruitful grapevine flourishing within your home. Or in other words, in modern language, your marriage will be healthy. And he says, your children will be like vigorous young olive trees shooting up as they sit around your table. Or in other words, your family will be healthy. Work healthy, marriage healthy, family healthy. Now, when I read that, I thought to myself, he actually believes that's possible. I wonder how. Well, he tells us in verse 1. Psalm 128:1, he says, here's how. How joyful are those who fear the Lord. How joyful are those who follow his ways. So I asked it at the beginning. I want to close by asking you again. What do you think? Do you think God created life to be endured or enjoyed? Well, the answer is simple at the end of the day. And the psalmist says the path to enjoyment is simple as well. It's fear of the Lord. It's following his ways. Or on this side of the cross in the empty tomb, it's following the way, the truth, the life, Jesus. So keep him the main thing. The main thing. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, I pray that you would center our lives around the number one priority, Jesus. And because of that, make us more Jesus-looking parents, Jesus-looking spouses, Jesus-looking employees, Jesus-looking leaders this week. It's that simple prayer that I pray over all the people in this room. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, would you do me a favor real quick? If you are a veteran in this room, would you stand up before we leave? Would you stand up, please? Come on, stand up. That's awesome. Here's what I would encourage you to do. On your way out, men, please, women, please keep standing, because I know you're like, oh, no, this is how you are. Just keep standing. I'd love for you to just grab one of these, if they're close to you, shake their hands, thank them for their service to our country. Have an awesome week. Take care.